So that takes us to from risk of understanding how the risk is happening how do I collect the information that's related to risk. If you look at it, everything that is known to me as a risk, I will have a list of it, as we just mentioned in the last conversation that we were having. So collecting requirements for procurement is the new thing that we're going to start off with. What do we mean by procurement? Procurement is buying. Procurement is resourcing everything that is required to run this project. So let me quickly read through the slide, and then we probably have a little more understanding around it. Procurement management refers to establishing procurement management policy, which shall specify the approach of defining the potential suppliers and documentation of the project procurement decision. So what do I mean by that? A lot of ways of doing it. One of them, which is very famous, that government applies, is if you've noticed in your newspapers, Times of India or Times of Pune or Times of Mumbai, Economic Times or for that Hindustan Times, Indian Express, you will have lot of tenders that get floated. Okay, now what do we mean by a tender? A tender is a closed bid. A closed bid where all the potential suppliers looking at the advertisement send a quotation to the organization who requires that supply. There is a date that's given to it, and based on the quality parameters and the cost parameters, the organization who requires that supply actually finalizes the bid, actually finalizes a supply. Why do you need to do that? Of course, you get a lot of market intelligence. So say I need a machine for cleaning the buildings, the government buildings that we have. I require a machine for cleaning. So I will actually throw up the bid as an agency, as a government person. I will throw up the bid and put it on the newspapers, put it on the television, put it on the websites, and then the potential suppliers actually bid for it. The moment they start bidding for it, I come to a consensus in terms of what is the quality parameter, what's the cost parameter that we're looking at. So the moment the cost and quality parameters are measured, I can then go ahead and appoint a supplier for that machine. So when I'm saying applying, putting it to a supplier, what do I mean by that? Then I have my standards of delivery, then I have my standards of quality, then I have my standards of cost, the schedule that the supplier has to provide it to me. So that's one mechanism. The other mechanism is finding best of three, so best of five or best of three, which means if it's a known product, say stationery in an office that's required, it's a known thing, it's easily available, and then you don't need to put a bid to it. So what we do actually go ahead and just call up the potential suppliers that I require and who fit into my criteria, ask the quotation from them, check the best of three, and allocate the contract to them. So that's one way, that the other way of doing it, of course. The third way of doing it is also called as online bidding. So a lot of organizations now, for that matter, telecom industry, one of the leading players in India, Idea Cellular, started this, and they actually started online bidding for SIM cards, which was done through Japan and China. So suppliers of Japan and China were actually bidding online, and an Idea individual was sitting in his office looking at the bid on the website, seeing who's the lowest and who's giving what rate. So it is called open bidding, where people sit online and they bid the product for the product and get the best value. This as a service as a service provider, they get a contract, and as a consumer, I get the best product and best price and best quality. So that's how these three methods are there. There are a lot of other methods also that we will describe later. So the point number two, which talks about interaction with suppliers, selection of suppliers, and establishing a contract. Now, apart from a product, apart from the quality of the cost of the product, there's also human intervention that is there when it comes to procurement. Like, do I get along with the supplier who supplies the product or a service to me? Why does why Why is it important? Because then he will prioritize my work. Am I in good terms with my supplier so that my work doesn't get delayed? If I'm in good terms with my supplier, he might also do a plus one for me. Why? Because I am a firm believer. If I don't like somebody, I don't want to do business with him. Whether he's going to give me profits or no, it doesn't matter. But people like to do business with people whom they like at the end of the day. So it's important that I have great relations with my suppliers. It's important that I do a little more for them while they're working with me so that I'm on the top of their mind. And human intervention plays a very, very important role when it comes to procurement. Third point is executing the contract, monitor the performance and incorporate a revision required. So your procurement plan or your procurement document always need to have a revision method. So where you don't get into a fix with the supplier. So it's not yes or no, but if it is yes, if and then. So if it's if and then kind of a contract, it helps you to have a little leeway if there is a revision that is happening. So the next point is complete and close each procurement contract. So take the relevant approvals, so whether it's from the HOD, whether it's from the CEO, whether it's from the project manager or the program manager. It is very, very important that you take the complete closure before you actually assign the task. Why? Because a lot of times, practically, because the crunch, the time crunch doesn't allow you to go through this process, and you actually order something. And the moment you order something, you're billed for it. The moment you're billed for it, you or your organization, for that matter, has to pay for it. The moment you have to pay and you don't, sometimes you just don't require that service at that point in time, then you're blocking your funds unnecessarily. Supposedly, I require a machine that's required in phase 3 and I give an order in phase 1. Phase 2, is the machine is just going to lie in my office premise and I'm not going to use it anyways. So I'm going to actually block a good amount of money off my kitty of the project, and it's going to be unnecessary parked with me. So important is I need to know when do I require, where do I require my supplies to be in correct schedule, and because what would happen is if I have a machine, as I give you an example, which is required in phase 3, and I'm asking that in phase 1, if I have that in phase 1, it's going to just get me into some kind of losses, which may not be that great, but at the end of the day, as I told you, accuracy of your delivery matters the most. The last is these aspects of project procurement will give you an overall view of your procurement plan and interact with each other, but are also interacting with other process aspects of project management. So just realize that every aspect of your project has to be clearly, crystally defined when you're working around it. What are the tools that you can use while collecting the procurement plan or creating the procurement plan? Project charter remains the same because that's the integral part of your project documents. Project scope, again, the same one. Project scheduling baseline, one of the examples that I just gave you about it. Then we have cost estimate data of what is the cost that I'm going to incur in procurement. I need to have an estimation. So estimation is the minimum and the maximum that I need to allocate the budget from, and I need to support it with some data. Market conditions of the product. So if I'm ordering, to give you an example, if I'm constructing a building, the cement rates are not stable. They keep changing. The steel rates keep changing, right, depending upon the supply and demand in the market. So I need to anticipate the max and the min that would be required while I'm procuring that data. So how much is the steel per kg going to cost me? And what's the maximum it will cost me? What's the minimum it will cost me? And who's the best who can provide me at this point in time? So important is I need to create that information around me when I'm procuring that product. Currency exchange rate, we've been giving you this example. If it's an international thing that you actually getting down to India from Indian premise, or you sending it outside if you're an importer or an exporter. if you need to calculate the currency rates and the deficits that they'll give you, because every bank will charge you the currency exchange rate. So you've got to be vigilant about it. Alternative proposed, if there's something that you can prepare in-house, and what is the cost of it preparing in-house, and what is the cost of it if I'm importing it. Available price list. So I need to have a list of suppliers, and of course the price list of the product or service that I would want to want them to supply to me. Available vendor data is again the suppliers. Government rules and regulations is what we want to talk about in this. So I've been constantly talking about government policies keep changing. Just you've got to be vigilant when those ideally are in big size projects which are directly or indirectly linked to the government policies and project requirement about direct deliverables, if any. So while I'm nuts and bolts is something that an automobile company wouldn't make. So if I have a project, a car making project, and nuts and bolts is a definite delivery that I need. So you've got to plan it in long term, because every car will require a nut and bolt at the end of the day. So let's take us to a management plan or procurement plan. What are the lists? I'm going to just read them out for you. As described in the previous slides, the primary requirement for procurement management are worked out, which includes procurement management plan, change or revision required for procurement policies, the list of long lead component materials, technical data requirement for the suppliers, fund requirement schedule, information about the delivery time if required, list of approved vendors, mode of deliveries in case the material to be delivered is directly to customer or project owner premise, macro level procurement plan, list of any ambiguity, list of information data required to resolve these ambiguities, list of risk factors, risk areas which will impact the project procurement, list of probable vendors and supplies and subcontractors. Collecting project requirement for procurement management. Again, if you look at it, the requirement generated will be on broader level. As I've been saying this will help you to have a broader level plan of your procurement, and that will help you to create your budgets as well. Clarification shall be arranged once the concerned parties, once you get the confirmation from the concerned parties. If necessary, a meeting shall be arranged with all the concerned parties to resolve the pending issues. So, as I told you, that human intervention is must, and you can't avoid that. So you need to have great relationships with your vendors, with your contractors and subcontractors. Why? Because I like to do business with the people that I like to do business. Such additional data with the requirement shall be further analyzed during the analysis phase, and various tools and techniques for output shall be used to finalize final project definition along with the risk management plan. These outputs also will be sent during planning for incorporating micro level risk management control and monitoring the same throughout the project of execution phase. So I have my procurement plan, I have my risk plan now. Now I completely know how am I going to take care of my project. So I know the material now, I know the risk that is involved now, I know the time that is going to require now. So we now have reached a stage in my initiation phase where I know what is the risk, where I know what is the time, where I know what is the budget, where I know where am I going to get the material from. So there are four things that we now covered from the initiation point of view. So everything is ideally documentation. However, this documentation becomes imperative because it gives me step-by-step clarity of how I'm going to do my project. Now, this is something that will help your stakeholders, your internal stakeholders and your customers, to believe in the way you actually executing the project. So that takes us to the next part of it, which talks about project stakeholder management. And then my favorite subject is, of course, stakeholder management. How do I manage my stakeholders in the project? So let's look at this, and then let me begin with an example around this. What do you mean by stakeholders? People who are directly and indirectly interested in my project. So let's look at projects where who can be indirectly affected and who can be directly affected. So I'll give you an example of a political party that is recently established in Delhi, which is called the Aam Aadmi Party. Now let's look at this as a project, and then because at the end of the day, the project that they had was winning the Delhi elections. So if you notice what happened in the scenario there, the people who were directly getting affected were the key stakeholders were the Aam Aadmi Party itself, all the people are party members. People who were also directly affected were the people in Delhi. So these people, so these were direct parties who will get affected by the project. Let's look at the indirect people who would get affected by the project. Congress was the indirect party. Then you have BJP, which was the indirect party. So if you realize, there will be stakeholders everywhere, and then these stakeholders will have different interests. And these interests can actually sometimes lead to deterioration of my project, or it might also help me to groom my project at a level that I even have not imagined. So what happened in this example that I'm giving you, if you realize that Aam Aadmi Party has won the election. Now when they have won the election, now the stakes have changed. Now the moment stakes have changed, there's somebody as a normal individual who has now become a chief minister of the state, and his interest has changed, his priorities have changed, the way he delivers things has changed. Similarly, Congress who was in the ruling party has completely gone away, and the moment they've gone away, their interest has changed, their way of execution has changed. Now they do not have daily operations to do, then now they do not have daily things to take care of the Delhi. So their modus operandi has changed. Now their look and interest would be, how can I ensure that I can come into the ruling party? And what would be the Aam Aadmi Party's agenda? How can I sustain of being in the ruling party? So stakeholding is very, very crucial. And in this all political arena, there is one party like BJP who's sitting and watching very identically what's happening in it, because they are in the center. So this example is purely from an Indian context point of view, because that's a recent activity that's happened. We need to realize that stakeholders play the greatest interest in the projects that I deliver. So this was more political. Let me also give you an example, which is corporate. So if I'm starting off with a project that is more quality orientation, so what we're talking about is excellence. Let's use that the organization has now said that excellence is the key to everything that we do. So if excellence is the key that everything that we do, of course, it's going to quality requires time, and it requires adequate time. So now you're going to get into a process of improving quality for everybody, every department in your organization. Now, every department, you start off with one department. Say you start off with human resources. So who are the parties involved in human resources? There will be the top management, there will be HR and the HR team who will be involved into it. However, somebody that is directly or indirectly linked to this could be the recruitment team, could be the procurement team. Why? Because now my procurement team has to allocate a budget. My finance team would be hit, because my complete way of operating and executing and recruiting would change, so as to that I ensure I have a good team in place. I need to have new systems in place to make a HRM or a human resource management system, or I need to have a new LMS, which is learning management system, or I need to have a leave management system. So every system or every software will require money. So my procurement is involved into it. Okay, so my finance is involved into it. So if I would want to make quality better for HR or human resources, the indirect parties that are reflecting are my procurement and my finance. Similarly, if I go to a service department, who will be involved into it? the service department, sales would be the indirect party who would be involved. My quality management would be the indirect party, or my quality management would be direct party involved in it. If I require some systems to be placed in, my procurement would come in, my finance would come in. So this is how stakeholding directly and indirectly. So interest of the parties. So let's look at it. If finance has their own project that's running on quality, and if you have a quality excellence team who's working on it, who are they going to prefer more? Quality excellence or finance? So ideally, practically they should give the preference to quality excellence. However, practically, the finance team is going to believe in what they are doing themselves. So this is how stakeholders are managed. And the moment the finance team is going to work on something that they're doing internally, I might see that the preference that's given to quality team is a little less. So managing stakeholders becomes the prime important for a project manager. So I'll read through what's been given here. It talks about project stakeholder management plan is an integral component of project management plan and shall address what all method of project operation that's been selected. So what's the method? Is it a part-time method? It's a full-time method? It's a full-time project? It's a part-time project? Is a project manager completely involved into only that project, or he has multiple projects to take care of? Procedure of for execution and closing project activities to achieve the objectives. So what is the procedure? How do we go on to execution? How do we go on to closing the project activities to achieve the objectives? Policy of human resource allocation, very, very important. How is my human resource being allocated to the project? Assigning the roles and responsibilities. And I need to have my roles and responsibility matrix very clear. I need to also have my competencies very clear of what kind of a person do I require to execute this project. Very, very important. At what level should be his competence? To give you a little brief on what's the difference between a skill and a competency. A skill is something that I can work on, is my ability to perform a task. And a competency is a set of my skills. How do I behave when I'm executing that skill? So, if I have a skill, communication is a competency that I require in a project team member. So while I have a communication as a competency that is required for my team member, what are the things that I have when it comes to communication? I need to have a good verbal communication. I need to have a good written communication. So at what level do I require the verbal communication? At what level do I require the written communication? If I want a person who's a content writer, obviously his written communication have to be stronger than his verbal communication, because he's going to write the content for you. So if you look at it, managing competencies and managing skill sets are one of the greatest skill that a project manager will have. Similarly, if you look at it, that I wouldn't have all people in my team at the same skill set levels. So people will be different at different levels. So how can I, do I have a mechanism, or do I have a leadership style that I can guide people who are not at a certain competency, however, are in the team, and how can I ensure that my team members are in sync with each other? So stakeholder management, when it comes to project team, becomes integral part of a project manager. Why? Because he's totally involved with them every day. One. Second, it also requires a lot of skills when it comes to influencing people. Why influencing? Because if I'm working in a HR department, I do not have a direct control over a finance department. So if I can't influence my finance folks, I'm not going to get the revenue that I expect during the budgeting process. While influencing becomes a great skill, the other skill that a project manager needs to have is something called as delegation. So if I'm not able to delegate correct tasks to a correct individual, I'm going to land up in soup and I'm going to deteriorate the way I'm working, either in terms of its quality or in terms of its time. So if I have two resources and I know who can do well at what, it becomes easy for me while I'm doing, acting as a project manager. That's one part of of a project manager, when I say stakeholder management. So let's look at this quickly. What did I say? Top skills that a project manager require. One is good communication skills. He needs to understand and communicate well. He needs to have a good influencing skills. He should be a person who can influence people which are directly related to the project. The third, he should be in a condition to negotiate well with people. So three key skills, as I said: be a good communicator, ensure that you are a good delegator, and ensure that you can negotiate well.